John Steenhuisen is the leader of the official opposition in South Africa. And I've been reading with much interest the work that you're doing on Eskom, John, not least because last week you had intended to have an oversight visit at Kusile. The first I heard of it was when I saw Pravin Gordhan sending out a media release to say that this is not good, that he wouldn't allow you to go there. So Kusile's quite a long way away. It's between, well, from where you are in Cape Town now, it's between about halfway between Bronkhorstspruit and Witbank, the old Witbank coalfields. So it's not easy to get to. There must have been a pretty good reason for you to decide to go there in the first place.
Yeah, Alec, great to be with you and great to obviously be with the BizNews family. To say that it's very important as a member of parliament to not sit in the air-conditioned rooms here and just accept what's being put in front of you as fact. One of my predecessors, Helen Suzman, always said, go and see for yourself. And that's how you get to the bottom of what's really going on. So I'm a big proponent of going to see for myself. I want to be part of the solution for this. And one of the things I wanted to do was to engage with the officials at Kusile to understand whether the excuses we keep being given about why things are not working there, why the thing's over budget, why it's way overdue in terms of the time, and why it's not producing enough electricity. I wanted to find out firsthand from them what was going on. And obviously, it's very frustrating when as a member of parliament and as you know, the leader of the opposition, which is actually a constitutional office in South Africa, you're prevented from doing so, and on the flimsiest of grounds. Now, I want to be very clear, because what the minister's tried to do is portray this, that I just got a flight of fancy and decided I'll drive to Kusile. That's not the case. My staff and Khaleb Kachalia, my minister, shadow minister of public enterprises, interacted with senior Eskom officials and told them. My staff in my office, led by my chief of staff, arrived the day before the visit and met with a lady called Steph on site, stakeholder management, indicated I was coming through and there was no problem. It was only when the minister found out about it that he swept into action. And I only wish he was as alert and as parat at dealing with the crisis as he is in trying to prevent me from doing my job, because I don't think we'd have an electricity crisis. And I was met with a line of security guards who were very intent on blocking my way. The minister's notion is that I should seek permission from him first before I go there. And I think there's something fundamentally wrong with that. I'm in charge with exercising oversight over the executive. How can it be that I must then go and ask the executive that I'm meant to be exercising oversight over whether I can and what date I can come and exercise oversight? So it was frankly farcical, and it was just designed purely to prevent me getting to the bottom of why we're sitting with one of the worst load shedding crises and no progress being made, and with a situation that's getting worse by the day. And this particular situation, I think, presents the clearest and most present danger to South Africa's economic and social well-being over the short to medium term. And that's why I want to get as much information as possible so I can contribute to the debate.
Yeah. I like your weekly newsletter, and particularly the weekly newsletter that you wrote addressing this, because you remind us of things. Now, perhaps it's worth reminding us exactly how Kusile started in 2007, what the budget was, and actually what has happened.
The thing was supposed to be finished almost 8 or 9 years ago, and it was supposed to be 80 billion. Well, I think we're sitting at over 200 billion, and we're still sitting with the thing not working. And as I said, it is a monument to the failed ideology of the government and of the department. And it's clearly, if we're looking to Kusile and Medupi as the model to get us out of the crisis, well, I think we should be very worried if that's what government's clinging to, because it's not going to get us out of the crisis that we're in.
So we know the old Eskom power stations had the six packs, and Kusile's got a six pack as well, six generating units. Again, I was interested to read in your letter that only two of the six are actually working. Are the other four not finished? Are they broken? Is there no maintenance? Do you have any other insight for us?
Well, that's what I wanted to find out, because we keep getting different stories. We're told that there's preventative maintenance being done. We're told that and seen pictures of collapse of some of the chimneys, etc. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to go there, was find out why it is not firing on all cylinders, and most importantly, what we could do to fast track the process to get those units all firing, because that's the reason we're sitting between stage 4 and 5 at the moment, is because the base load is just not being provided. And that's also why no one can tell us whether in the next 3 hours we're going to go into stage 4 or 5, or the next few days, or perhaps the next week. But I think that the bottom line is, and everybody knows it, you don't have to be an electricity engineer to know it, things are getting worse, not getting better. We've had 2,881 hours of load shedding this year. That's a full 120 days out of 365 of load shedding. And we've had the largest amount of that time spent in stage 3, 4, and 5. Now, if you compare it to last year, it's more than trebled the amount of hours and we were out by load shedding.
One of the solutions that you proposed was to put together a war cabinet. And when you are in a state of emergency, a war cabinet is required. But it was very interesting at the time that André de Ruyter was surprisingly made the chief executive of Eskom. There was another guy in the mix called Andy Carlitz. Andy Carlitz was an electrical engineer who started his business career at Eskom. He also has recently been given an honorary doctorate by the Stellenbosch University, where he studied. He also studied at Harvard. He's gone internationally. He's done incredibly well globally. It appears as though this kind of person is just being overlooked, or perhaps is that the kind of person who you spoke about, an electrical or somebody, an expert in the field, that you would draft in to run this war room or this war cabinet?
He's precisely the sort of person who should be sitting there. But let me just predicate those comments by saying that I feel sorry for André de Ruyter. I wouldn't like his job. I think it's one of the hardest jobs in South Africa now. But the reality is that it's an impossible job. And frankly, you could put Warren Buffett in there. You could put Jack Welch in there. You could put Elon Musk in there. You're never going to fix the problem because the model is wrong. State monopoly is never going to be able to supply electricity and the needs that we want in a modern world. To my mind, it doesn't matter who's in that top job. What matters to me is that we focus on getting good people around a table, no matter what the color of their T-shirt is, around the table to come up with solutions and find what they are. We're not the first country to be in this crisis. I read extensively about Thailand, for instance, who had a similar problem. Theirs was caused by economic growth that was outstripping their electricity supply, which must be a nice problem to have. We're having our electricity supply stripped and our growth stripped at the same time, which is not a great place to be. But what they did is opened up the industry. They set a price and said, whoever can provide electricity, you can provide it. This is what we'll pay for it. And within a year, they had a surplus of electricity. And so the longer we cling to this big clunking fist of state model of trying to fix, to provide electricity, we're not going to move the needle. But in the short term, when you're losing a war, you've got to change the generals. You've got to get the right people around the table and people who've got expertise. And that's also why we're calling for that ring-fenced state of disaster as well. Because once you have those experts around the table, and it doesn't matter whether they come from South Africa, whether they come from abroad, you then have got to free their hands to be able to deal with the crisis. It's no use bringing them in and then lashing their hands behind their back, because you're going to end up with the same problem that we sit with today. So I think people are tired of hearing about turnarounds. And I mean, Eskom's been turned around so many times, I think it's dizzy. Acting appointments, we need to get real, and we need to get international experts, local experts, wherever they may be, into that system. And then we need to unleash them to be able to come up with solutions free of political ideology, free of political interference. What is going to be the quickest way for us to get electricity back into the grid? That's got to be the primary focus. And that's why we're calling for, A, that war room, but also then a ring-fenced state of disaster, which would exempt them from the constraints and yokes that have been put onto state-owned entities by government's failed policies.
But the other thing that came through from your newsletter that is very relevant to South Africans is the bureaucracy. So Eskom can't keep the lights on because it's run out of budget. It's got no budget for the rest of the year, its financial year to the end of March. Isn't surely there's something that can be done about that? If you're in a company and you have a critical issue that you need to continue with, you have a board meeting and put through an emergency amount of money. But in this case, they can't buy any more diesel, so they can't keep the turbines going. So as a consequence, whenever there's shortages, tough luck, South Africa, we're just closing down the economy.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, I think it's also not assisted by the diesel price increases and the general fuel price increases, which makes it difficult to budget for. But it is, I mean, outrageous. There's 4 months to go still, and the budget for diesel's already been burnt. Burning diesel should be a stopgap measure. It should really be an emergency measure to tie you over. What we've been doing, however, is treating it as a primary means to generate electricity. And it's not good for the environment. It's not good for our finances and the like. But it also comes down to reprioritizing, you know, what you need to do. And we're busy spending billions of rand, for instance, on VIP protection services for cabinet ministers. But, you know, we've got an electricity crisis where we can't keep the lights on, and it affects businesses. And that's the other big worry, Alec, is that there is a real world cost to this. I spoke to the CEO of a major telecommunications company a month ago, and he said to me that they've spent 25 million rands worth of diesel to keep their network going, that when the network goes, when the load shedding happens, they lose up to 25% of their network. And they've got people from government breathing down their neck to lower data costs and lower carrier costs. And they said, but how can we be asked to lower it on one side and you're driving up the cost of doing business on the other? And I have a sympathy with that because, you know, if they don't burn that diesel, they're going to lose customers and lose market share. So it's devastating. That's why I say we should stop calling it load shedding and calling it job shedding. Because there's only one way that companies can mitigate against those rising costs, and that's by trying to do more with less employees. And I think that's why we've seen over the last while our unemployment figures climbing so steadily.
I've got another story for you. We interviewed the CEO of ASP Isotopes. This is a South African-developed technology, which is leading in the world. In Pretoria, there's a group of guys these rocket scientists who were at the old Atomic Energy Corporation. They've built the factory. They've proven the point. The isotope works. It's now controlled by a NASDAQ-listed company, and the next factories will not be built in South Africa because there's not enough security of power. So there's this wonderful innovation that's now going to be, the plants are going to be all over the world, but not here. It's just an indication, again, a reflection of how this affects the economic potential of this country. Okay, so let's wave a magic wand. 2024 is over. The DA is part of a coalition that is running South Africa. What would you guys do if we fast forward to 2024 and we have the situation we're in right now at Eskom?
Well, the first thing we'd do is to open up the industry, break the monopoly, and allow any entrant into the energy generation and supply market, and to open up the grid to allow them to input into the grid, to sell into the grid, and make sure that we also at the same time free up competent municipalities to contract directly with independent power producers to be able to power their municipalities and feed into the local grid. Making absolutely sure that only capable municipalities that are able to do that, but also then ensuring that we break, as I said, the stranglehold that government has over the industry itself. I think there's huge potential here. Actually, I think we could unleash a jobs revolution in a greenfield energy sector of independent power producers, green energy. All sorts of opportunities there. And so there's some people who say, oh, but what about, you know, the poor Eskom employees? Well, I think that they would be the first in line to be absorbed into these new industries because they've got the experience. And I think there's opportunities for young entrepreneurs as well in South Africa. But government needs to get out of the way. And that's the first thing I'd make sure DA government did, is get out of the way. Open up the industry, allow players and allow that competition. And I can guarantee you supply will increase. And I think that the price will go down ultimately for consumers as well. But the other thing is there's no point, you know, going off to England and trotting around in carriages, begging people to come and invest here. And you have to ask them to look past load shedding. Well, how do you look past one of the most basic fundamentals of any investment? Electricity, water, stable government, and safety. Those are the key fundamentals that investors look at when they examine the basket of countries where they have potential to go. And I'm afraid we're not ticking enough of those boxes. So, you know, it's one thing to go to investors and ask them to come and invest, but you've got to create the environment that's keeping your current investors here and encouraging new people to come in. And then I would also go internationally to look for companies, expertise, and have a fast-track visa system to allow them to be able to come and play in the space in South Africa. Our current visa regime is a repellent to skilled, talented people in a variety of industries. At the moment, I think that we should, you know, open up the visa regime for skilled people from other countries to come here and bring that expertise to places like Eskom and the like. And then we're going to have to, as a government, look at the alternative energy sources that are available and start to manage the mix better. But for me, the fundamental, Alec, is breaking that monopoly, because we cannot be reliant on a single generator and supplier. That's why we sit here with no options today. It's because there's Eskom and only Eskom. And if Eskom doesn't work, electricity doesn't work. And we should never, ever land up in that situation ever again in any system in South Africa. There should always be an open market and open players, and it should be done on price and competitive competition between players.
But I thought that that was the case. I just, as a citizen of South Africa, certainly we've now been told that we will be able to sell electricity back into the grid if you've got solar power. Cyril has a whole plan that he's going to change things. What's missing here?
It was a great plan, but the reality is it's not being implemented. And the man that he tasked with implementing the plan happens to be on some mysterious trip to Russia yet again. David Mabuza was appointed by Cyril to Ramaphosa to deal with the Eskom matter and electricity and the energy war room, as he called it. But the reality is that there's very little of that plan has actually been implemented. And we're running a tracker on our website, which looks at just how much of that plan has been implemented and what hasn't. The easiest one is allowing people to sell into the grid. But municipalities have to be then empowered to work out price points and to work out a measure to be able to recompensate people for what they put into the grid or offset it against the current bill. And that remains a mess. They still are required to get the permission of the national minister before they can go out and do that. And that is an arduous process. So I think there's still far too much red tape. And when it comes to government's restrictions, these things like localization, preferential procurement, etc., are not helping. I used the example recently in Parliament where Eskom paid almost 2,000 rand for a broom because they're required to meet the preferential procurement targets where we're doing racial bean counting. And it actually ends up diverting good money that could have maybe gone to diesel when you're paying 2,000 rand for a broom. And I think that that is a fundamental problem that needs to be moved out of the way as well.
Just seems like a whole lot of mess. Once again, South Africa with these wonderful ideas, but no implementation. The execution, once again, falling over. John Steenhuisen is the leader of the Democratic Alliance, the official opposition in South Africa's parliament. I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.